You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 143 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Three Paths to Christ, Experiencing the Supersensible, 14 Lectures, translated by Christiane O'Brien. This is the last lecture in this collection, Lecture 14, given in Cologne on the 29th of December, 1912, entitled Novalis, Proclaimer of a Spiritually Conceived Christ Impact. When we hear the resounding heart of our dear Novalis, through which he knew how to announce Christ's mission in such a heartfelt way, we can feel a certain confirmation of our spiritual movement, because we feel it in a personality whose entire being is deeply entwined with all the riddles and mysteries of the world, and we feel reverberating from him something akin to longing for the spiritual world, something which souls more recently arrived have to seek out in worldviews such as those toward which we strive. It is wonderful to immerse oneself in the heart and soul of a personality such as Novalis, how he grew beyond the depths of Western spiritual life, being himself deeply immersed in capturing the yearning for the spiritual world. If we allow the way spiritual worlds streamed into his youthful heart in this incarnation to affect our souls, and how those spiritual worlds irradiated him with Christ's impetus, we will experience something of a challenge to our souls, to our own hearts, to strive with him toward what appeared to him as a higher light, the light toward which he unremittingly dedicated his most recent short existence. We feel how, in his latest incarnation, he was one of the prophets of what we seek in spiritual realms. And we also feel how best we can be enthused for this search by sharing the enthusiasm in the heart and soul of a Novalis, a soul thoroughly suffused with Christ's motivation. In the present moment of our endeavors, when, on the one hand, we are seeking to found the Anthroposophical Society, intended to encompass all human riddles, and when, on the other hand, we wish to observe the light shining so radiantly from the Orient in connection with Christ's impetus, we may be allowed to connect ourselves with what expresses Christ's impulse in this soul of Novalis. We know that once in ancient Hebrew times the great voice of prophecy rang forth in the momentous words of Elijah, welling forth from out of creation. We know that this was the stimulus present when the cosmic being of Christ descended into the body of Jesus of Nazareth. We know that this was the same motivating force which prophetically announced what was about to be embodied in human evolution. We know further that this spurred the soul of Raphael to magically reveal for human gaze the boundless mysteries of Christianity. Sensing mysterious enigmas, we turn our longing souls toward the reincarnated soul of Elijah, of John the Baptist, of Raphael, toward Novalis. And we feel with this soul how all its vibrancy is charged and irradiated throughout with longing for a new spiritual life for humanity. And then we feel the courage, sensing that something of this strength comes to us, helping us to live toward humanity's new spirituality. Oh, why is Novalis, born into these more recent times, prophetically proclaiming a move that conceives spiritually of Christ? Was it not all around him in his spiritual horizon, like a resurgence of the great spiritual streams in humanity as a whole? Novalis grew out of circles in which spiritual life itself glowed like a first declaration of a theosophical, anthroposophical worldview in the Western world. In the radiance of a Goethe sun and a Schiller sun, did this Christ-longing and weaving soul mature towards Christ's influence? What sort of spiritual stream was alive in Goethe? How is spiritual son quality expressed through Goethe as it radiates out into his young contemporary? Goethe sought in Spinoza's outlook to identify through feeling everything that might calm his hotly glowing, passionate nature, everything that might ensoul him for dedication to the spirit. Among Spinoza's comprehensive worldview, Goethe was looking for a view into the widths of the cosmos and to the spiritual beings weaving throughout it, radiating into human souls, enabling these souls to resolve the mysteries of nature and their own souls by feeling and recognizing the creative essence living and weaving in all beings and worlds. Out of what he could glean from Spinoza did Goethe try to elevate himself to purity and vision. He felt in a spiritual sense something of the monotheistic outlook which resounds and glows across the ages to us from the words of the Vedas. If one follows this up, one can hear in the loveliest consonants of Goethe's renewed Vedic words, as they resound with the warm enthusiasm kindled in Novalis, together culminating in the mystery of Christ and the world. Light streams out toward us in Goethe's Vedic words. Love and warmth flow into light, when Novalis's Christ-proclaiming words cascade feeling into Goethe's light-filled words. In other places, if we grasp Goethe, where, in full keeping with the lore of world unity, he recognizes the independence of each soul, in Leibniz's sense, then we sense something wafting toward us, not from Goethe's words, yet within the ethos of Western monadology, which is a reiteration of Sankhya philosophy. This all matured in the heart of Novalis, turned as it was toward Christ, as the Weimar and Jena of those years experienced something of a reverberation, an echo of Sankhya philosophy. You can sometimes feel a spirit of this kind permeated by modern nuances, of a Sankhya mood, in one such as Fichte, with his prim brittleness. You feel how he is made gentler, made into a true spirit of the times, when alongside him you observe his devoted enthusiasm when he thinks of Novalis. On the one hand, you hear in Fichte's remarkable renewal of the words of ancient India that the world surrounding us is merely a dream, and that thinking in its everyday form is merely a dream about a dream, but that reality is the human soul as it pours its will as a force into this world of dreams. Such are Fichte's renewed words from the Vedantas. Next to this is Novalis's confidence. Oh, he felt this confidence somewhat like this. Yes, physical existence is a dream. Thinking is a dream about dreaming. But from this dream there wells forth everything that the human soul deems and feels to be most valuable, and in this feeling and sensing can do what is spiritual. Out of this dream of life, out of his Christ-inspired I, capital, does the soul of Novalis create magical idealism, as he calls it, which means spiritually carried idealism. And we feel as if almost more harmoniously than it can otherwise be in a world dream, that something seizes us when we see Novalis's loving soul standing next to another spiritual hero of his time, listening, while Schiller tries to elate the world with his enthusiasm, and how Novalis, in depicting Schiller's ethical idealism, himself announces his magical idealism from his Christ-inspired heart. How deeply it speaks to our souls, this goodness, which we can call Novalis's most inward of inner occidental kindliness, when he writes with such enthusiasm about Schiller. Its entire integrity, all its capacity for love of a human soul, is expressed when we allow ourselves to be affected by the words Novalis spoke when praising Schiller for what he meant to him, for what Schiller meant to humanity. To express this praise, Novalis said something along the lines of the following, quote, "If those avarice-free beings we call spirits can perceive in the heights such words and such human knowing as flow within Schiller, then may those desire-free beings we call spirits also be filled with the wish to descend to the human world and be incarnated here, to work on true human evolution, absorbing such understanding as flows from a personality such as this, Schiller. Close quote. Dear friends, which heart can so revere, which heart can so love, that it is a paradigm heart for all those who wish to surrender to this feeling of genuine, true, devotion-filled reverence and love? Such a heart can express in the simplest words the great mysteries of the world and the human soul. This is why some of the words issuing from Novalis's mouth have such value, as if they lent renewed resonance to what, from out of the threefold stream of humankind, has so longingly, and sometimes in so light-filled a way, been raised to the Spirit throughout all time. He stands before us, this reborn Raphael, this reborn John, this reborn Elijah. There he stands before us, and we may revere him, and he may be one of many intermediaries who can show us the way toward the Spirit revelations, toward which we work in the stream of our spiritual movement, so that with a true heart, true love, true enthusiasm, and devotion may allow us to succeed in bringing down from spiritual heights what we hope will also flow into the most guileless of souls. Because whatever may be said here or there about the inaccessibility of modern spiritual research, it is primarily those unworldly hearts and minds who will be damaged by lies about incomprehensibility. For it is they who will understand how our spiritual stream seeks to be a downward conduit from spiritual heights. The path from spiritual heights must not be sought only for those among whom some may, to varying extents, have allowed spiritual practices to work on them. We should seek a path for all yearning souls who long for truth and the Spirit. Whilst our preface should be Goethe's axiom, which only has to be grasped in the depths of its simplicity, quote, truth exists only within truth, close quote, so must our aim be to transform the spiritual life we seek and about which we hear in such a way that through the grace that spiritual powers bestow on us, we frame this spiritual life in such a way that it can find its way to every single seeking soul. That must be our aim. It is our will to work in truth and actively to find ways to all seeking souls, at whichever stage of their incarnation they may be. The mysteries of incarnation are profound, as the path of Novalis's incarnations shows us. That is why he, of all people, can lead us ahead like a guiding star, can lead us forward in such a way that in feeling him and following him, we too summon the goodwill to rise with every effort toward him in knowledge, while on the other hand nurturing that life-filled will to reach every human heart seeking truthfully for the Spirit. Let what Novalis himself so beautifully says, and which can serve as a kind of motto, light us forward to the decisions we made at the outset of this anthroposophical spiritual stream. Words are no longer mere words when spiritual words are also the founders of worldviews, because then they are both enlightening and warming for loftier and humbler souls alike. And this must become our longing. It was also what Novalis longed for. He expressed this in the lovely words I wish to bring you, at the end of which I have changed a single word, and which speaks to your hearts, my dear friends. I change this word of Novalis, even though Philistines, who think themselves free spirits, may be a little incensed. So let our guiding star, among other guiding stars, also be what lies in Novalis's beautiful words, quote, when numbers and figures cease to be, for every creature's thoughts are key. When they who merely kiss or sing no more than sages reckoning. When life to freedom will attain, and freedom in creation reign. When light and shade no longer single, in splendid clarity intermingle. and one in tales and poems sees the world's eternal histories, then will our perverse, herd-like being before one secret word be fleeing. Close quote. The end of Lecture 14, and that is the end of the book, Three Paths to Christ, Experiencing the Supersensible, 14 Lectures by Rudolf Steiner, translated by Christiana Bryan. These lectures were given in various cities between January and December of 1912.